Welcome back. Previously on sermons, you might remember that when the Israelites began to complain about the lack of variety in their diet, Moses just kind of threw up his hands and said he couldn't deal with it anymore and told the Lord, I didn't give birth to these people. I shouldn't have to be their wet nurse. If you can't get me some help, just kill me now. And we've had a little bit of a cliffhanger, waiting to see if the Lord would take him up on that offer. Well, it's not likely, since Moses has pretty much been the star of the show for a few books now. Well, we'll pick up the story in Numbers chapter 11, verse 16. And the Lord said unto Moses, gather unto me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom thou knowest to be the elders of the people, and officers over them, and bring them unto the tabernacle of the congregation, that they may stand there with thee. And I will come down and talk with thee there, and I will take of the Spirit which is upon thee, and will put it upon them. And they shall bear the burden of the people with thee, that thou bear it not thyself alone. Now, it's not quite clear how he was going to take of the Spirit of Moses in a non-destructive manner, presumably, and give it to these elders. It sounds kind of supernatural-like, but he may just have been saying that he was just going to give them a pep talk and fire them up, you know, motivate their team spirit. Anyway, Moses was given 70 underlings that he could delegate his authority to so that he didn't have to nursemaid the Israelites all by himself. And say thou unto the people, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow, and ye shall eat flesh. For ye have wept in the ears of the Lord, saying, who shall give us flesh to eat? For it was well with us in Egypt. Therefore the Lord will give you flesh, and ye shall eat. Ye shall not eat 1 day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, neither 10 days, nor 20 days, but even a whole month, until it come out at your nostrils, and it be loathsome unto you, because that ye have despised the Lord which is among you, and have wept before him, saying, why came we forth out of Egypt? So he's like, I'm going to give you meat till you're sick of it. You know, which totally misunderstands what they were complaining about, which was more the lack of variety on the menu than it was the lack of meat. And it seems like this misunderstanding was intentional. Kind of spiteful, if you ask me. And Moses said, the people among whom I am are 600,000 footmen, and thou hast said, I will give them flesh that they may eat a whole month. Shall the flocks and the herds be slain for them to suffice them? Or shall all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them to suffice them? And the Lord said unto Moses, is the Lord's hand waxed short? Thou shalt see now whether my word shall come to pass unto thee or not. And Moses went out and told the people the words of the Lord, and gathered the 70 men of the elders of the people, and set them round about the tabernacle. And the Lord came down in a cloud, and spake unto him, and took of the Spirit that was upon him, and gave it unto the 70 elders. And it came to pass that when the Spirit rested upon them, they prophesied and did not cease. Now, the King James Version says he came down in a cloud, which makes it sound like it's just any old cloud. You know, I kind of picture the cloud that forms in the transporter room before the transportee materializes or dematerializes, depending on which way it's going. But most other translations say that he came down in the cloud, which seems to mean the cloud that covered the tabernacle, which would make sense since the tabernacle is where Moses and the 70 elders were waiting. Now, again, it doesn't say how Lord Yahweh took Moses' spirit and distributed it to the elders, but it manifested itself as the gift of prophecy. The ability to prophesy. But there remained two of the men in the camp. The name of the one was Eldad, and the name of the other Medad. and the Spirit rested upon them. And they were of them that were written, but went not out unto the tabernacle, and they prophesied in the camp. So they hadn't actually gone to the tabernacle to listen to the pep talk. I guess maybe they listened on Yahwehian radio or something and got fired up that way. And there ran a young man and told Moses and said, Eldad and Medad do prophesy in the camp. And Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of Moses, one of his young men, answered and said, My Lord Moses, forbid them. Now why would Joshua care if these two elders started prophesying in the camp? Well, apparently he felt like if there were too many prophets around, it would diminish Moses' authority. But Moses, for one, didn't care, as we'll see. And Moses said unto him, Enviest thou for my sake? Would God that all the Lord's people were prophets, and that the Lord would put his Spirit upon them. And Moses got him up into the camp, he and the elders of Israel. And there went forth a wind from the Lord, and brought quails from the sea, and let them fall by the camp, as it were a day's journey on this side, and as it were a day's journey on the other side, round about the camp, and as it were 2 cubits high upon the face of the earth. Now, a day's journey in biblical times was somewhere between 20 and 25 miles. And a cubit was a little less than 2 feet. So we're talking quails almost 4 feet deep in a circle with a diameter somewhere between 40 and 50 miles. Now, that's a lot of quail. Kind of hard to believe. And the people stood up all that day and all that night and all the next day, and they gathered the quails. But now, where did they stand if the quails were almost 4 feet deep? So it must just mean that there were places where they were almost 4 feet deep. That's all I can figure. Anyway, he that gathered least gathered 10 homers, and they spread them all abroad for themselves round about the camp. Now, a homer was about 6 1/4 bushels, 6 bushels and a peck. The word homer comes from the Hebrew word for an ass. So maybe that's where Homer Simpson got his name. A homer was considered to be 1 ass load. And 6 bushel baskets would load your ass up pretty good. That would be about all a donkey could carry. And the person who gathered the least gathered 10 ass loads of quail, which again is a lot of quail. And while the flesh was yet between their teeth, ere it was chewed, the wrath of the Lord was kindled against the people. And the Lord smote the people with a very great plague. Now, if the Lord sent tainted quail to cause this plague, that seems like a pretty dirty trick to me. But maybe the quail meat was okay and the plague was just due to overeating, in which case I guess you could blame the people for being gluttons. And he called the name of that place Kibroth Hataava, because there they buried the people that lusted after quail. And the people journeyed from Kibroth Hataava unto Hazeroth, and abode at Hazeroth. That's the end of chapter 11. Chapter 12. And Miriam and Aaron spake against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. That last seems like a parenthetical explanatory note, you know, that was inserted by a later editor or something like that. I don't know if Zipporah passed away or if Moses took an additional wife while Zipporah was still alive. I don't think it's talking about Zipporah herself here, since she was from Midian, not Ethiopia. Kind of in the vicinity, but not really. Now, what was Miriam and Aaron's complaint? That Moses had taken another wife, or that she was Ethiopian? It sounds like the latter. Otherwise, why stress that she was an Ethiopian? Was Miriam racist? If so, she could probably have convinced Aaron to be racist too, whether he was really racist or not, since he was easily persuaded to go along with just about anything. If you remember the golden calf incident as an example. And they said, "Hath the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Hath he not spoken also by us?" And the Lord heard it. They had a point, though, because Aaron was the high priest and Miriam was a prophetess. It said so back in Exodus when she was dancing at the coconut grove after the Red Sea crossing. Now the man Moses was very meek above all the men which were upon the face of the earth. That's another parenthetical explanatory note, probably inserted by a later editor, since if Moses had written that, that would be very unseemly, kind of self-congratulatory. And the Lord spake suddenly unto Moses, and unto Aaron, and unto Miriam, "Come out ye three unto the tabernacle of the congregation." And they three came out. So he's all the time calling people into the tabernacle to chat with them. And the Lord came down in the pillar of the cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam, and they both came forth. So this time it was the cloud that covered the tabernacle that the Lord came down in, or at least that he appeared to come down in. For all we know, he could have beamed down from the ship into the cloud and then emerged from it to greet Moses and Aaron and Miriam at the door. Notice he came right out in the open this time. He didn't hide in the Holy of Holies behind the veil. He stood right there in the doorway. And if he could reveal himself to Miriam, there's no point arguing about whether Moses was authorized to see him, like we did an episode or two ago. And he said, "Hear now my words. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in a vision, and will speak unto him in a dream. My servant Moses is not so, who is faithful in all mine house. With him will I speak mouth to mouth, even apparently, and not in dark speeches. And the similitude of the Lord shall he behold. Wherefore then were ye not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" So what he's saying here is, here's the difference between you two and Moses. You two have to rely on dreams and visions and so on. But Moses and I have actual friendly conversations because we go way back. So you two may be prophets and all, but Moses clearly outranks you. But there is that one little thing there. The similitude of the Lord shall he behold. You know, similitude means, you know, similarity, resemblance, whatever. You know, it's like there's the image of the Lord that he should behold. So I guess that's, you know, when he's talking to a video screen or something like that. Or maybe it's just the fact that it's another Yahwelian that he's talking to that resembles the Lord because, you know, of the racial resemblance. I don't know. "And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. And the cloud departed from off the tabernacle. And behold, Miriam became leprous, white as snow, and Aaron looked upon Miriam, and behold, she was leprous." Now, this reminds me of those old stories where it says, "And his hair turned white overnight," you know, or her hair in this case. "And Aaron said unto Moses, Alas, my Lord, I beseech thee, lay not the sin upon us wherein we have done foolishly and wherein we have sinned. Let her not be as one dead, of whom the flesh is half consumed when he cometh out of his mother's womb. And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, Heal her now, O God, I beseech thee, And the Lord said unto Moses, If her father had but spit in her face, should she not be ashamed 7 days? Let her be shut out from the camp 7 days, and after that let her be received in again. And Miriam was shut out from the camp 7 days, and the people journeyed not till Miriam was brought in again. So they ignored the fact that the cloud had lifted, temporarily anyway, and they waited to travel until Miriam could go with them. Kind of, you know, contradicts what was said earlier, is that whenever the cloud went up, they hit the road. And afterward, the people removed from Hazeroth and pitched in the wilderness of Paran. And that's the end of chapter 12. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Send thou men, that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall ye send a man, every one a ruler among them. And Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran. All those men were heads of the children of Israel. And these were their names. Of the tribe of Reuben, Shammua, the son of Zachor. Of the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat, the son of Hori. Of the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. Of the tribe of Issachar, Igal, the son of Joseph. Of the tribe of Ephraim, Oshea, the son of Nun. Now, Oshea is apparently just an alternate spelling of Joshua. You know, he and Caleb are the only two that we'll hear of again, so I'm just going to fade out of the rest of them to hide the rest of my mispronunciations. Of the tribe of Benjamin, Paltai, the son of Raphu. Of the tribe of Gad, Geuel, the son of Machi. These are the names of the men which Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Oshea, the son of Nun, Jehoshua. Now, if Moses called him Jehoshua, and Moses wrote the book of Numbers, wouldn't the spelling be consistent throughout the book of Numbers? Why would he call him Joshua in one place and Oshea in another place and now Jehoshua? Doesn't this kind of suggest that there were several different authors of the book of Numbers in particular and the Torah in general? And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said unto them, Get you up this way southward, and go up into the mountain, and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwelleth therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood therein or not. And be ye of good courage, and bring of all the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. And they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob, as men come to Hamath. And they ascended by the south, and came unto Hebron, where Ahiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, the children of Anak, were. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. Another parenthetical remark here. And they came unto the brook of Eshcol, and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff. And they brought of the pomegranates and of the figs. That was one big bunch of grapes if two men had to carry it between them on a pole. The place was called the brook Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes which the children of Israel cut down from thence. And they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them, and unto all the congregation, and shewed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, We came unto the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. So there were big cities with big walls, you know, like Jericho. And big people lived there, these children of Anak. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than us. See, these are the ones that we don't hear anything about other than they went to spy and brought back a negative report. We remember Caleb and Joshua by name, though. They were the more positive ones. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, The land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of a great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. Now, the Hebrew word that's translated as giants here is Nephilim. And I'm sure you remember we've seen that word before. Back in Genesis chapter 6 and in the book of Enoch, when the sons of God, the angels called the watchers, saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they mated with them, producing giant offspring called the Nephilim. Now these sons of Anak, also called the Anakim, were come of the giants, which means descended from the Nephilim. And that means that the great flood must not have been quite as destructive as it was originally intended. It wasn't just a few normal-sized humans who survived. It wasn't just Moses and his family, Zeasudra and his family, you know, all those various ones that got the warning and built an ark of some kind. And some of the Nephilim survived, apparently. I mean, people differ about this. Some think that the word Nephilim here does not refer back to the Nephilim of Genesis 6, that these are other giants that developed later. But, you know, it's odd. You know, why would you then say they came of the giants? They descended from the Nephilim. That wouldn't make sense. So I think the flood missed out on destroying the Nephilim. And some people think that the whole point of the flood was to get rid of the Nephilim. It wasn't to get rid of all the sinful people, although that might have been a side benefit. You know, the Nephilim were the result of unnatural acts. And arguably, humans were the result of unnatural acts as well, the combination of Yahwehian DNA with the DNA of the already existing proto-humans. We've talked about this before, you know, that humanity was looked upon as an experiment that had failed. And originally, one Yahwehian contingent wanted to euthanize the humans that had already existed, and another one wanted to release them into the wild, and ultimately they were released into the wild, driven out of the Garden of Eden, or the Gardens of the Eden, where they were fruitful and multiplied. And then at the time of the Great Flood, they had an even bigger problem, a lot bigger problem. But to get back to the Nephilim and the Watchers, you may wonder why the Watchers would abandon their posts, you know, wherever they were, on the mothership or on the moon base, you know, and go down to Earth. Nephilim is arguably from the root Nephal, which means to fall, to fall to Earth, you know, which, you know, they're often called the fallen angels. But it could just mean that they fell from orbit. Well, I think the reason that they would abandon their posts is because Yahwehian females were in short supply in this sector, this space sector, due to the Yahwehian Space Force being unable to attract enough female recruits. You know, Yahwehians are very masculine-oriented. We got our traditions from them. And it's taken us a while to kind of try to eliminate those, even though they're not in the vicinity anymore. And it wasn't all that much of an unnatural act for Yahwehians to mate with Earthlings, since they probably had a common ancestor. In both cases, the DNA for that common ancestor had been seeded both on the Yahwehian's home planet and on Earth by some sort of interstellar object, possibly like Oumuamua or the Borisov comet. I'm not saying it was one of those. I'm just using those as examples of an interstellar object. And those original building blocks of life took off and created through the evolutionary process various proto-beings that would eventually turn into Yahwehians and Earthlings. It probably arrived on the Yahwehian planet first, since they developed sooner than we did, or we still haven't developed to that point. But at some point, the original creator Elohim came to Earth and terraformed it and made it a likely place for humans / Yahwehians to develop. And we did develop to some extent into what I call proto-humans. You know, Neanderthals, Cro-Magnons, whatever. Then later on, later still, the Yahwehians came to Earth, the Yahweh Elohim just being a particular case, a particular branch of the Elohim in general. And these Yahwehians created the Adamic race by combining their own DNA with that of the proto-humans who had evolved from that original seeding. And when I say the Adamic race, I'm talking about, you know, the race of which Adam was the first member, if you take that story literally. Well, we're once again out of time. And we'll pick it up next time at the beginning of Numbers chapter 14, since we're just arrived at the end of chapter 13. Until then, keep the faith. Keep on mating with those earth women so we can be fruitful and multiply. But try not to engage in any unnatural acts with aliens.